Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the New Media Show. My name is Todd Cochrane. I want to welcome you to today's event from a very hot and muggy Honolulu. Good morning, Rob. Good morning. How are you?
Doing fantastic, Todd. It's not hot and muggy here, but it is going to be hot today. So, the best of both worlds.
The number one thing being ordered on Amazon right now from Hawaii is an ark. It has been raining. You know, the tourist, I'd be pissed paying all that money to come over here. And then we've had like flash flood. We've had flash flood warnings for like 24 hours. This system just came on top of us and just sat and dumped and dumped and dumped. It's been crazy. I've never seen anything like it. But anyway, enough on the weather report.
Yeah, and it's probably really, really, you know, with all that rain, it's humid, right?
That's
kind of what happens.
Yeah, and I'm happy my grass has gotten enough rain for a whole year. So it's all good. But hey, you want to welcome our guest this morning, Mr. Corey Coates. Good morning, Corey. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. It's raining in Montreal since we're going around the table and giving the weather.
Yeah, it's something we do every week. So
The difference between you guys and me, though, at some point that rain turns to snow, and that's my only advantage. So,
well, I was just listening to Anne Murray's Snowbird last night at about midnight because I'm gearing up. I get the heck out of here once that snow flies. I head down to Costa Rica for 6 months.
Oh, you are smart.
Yes, yeah. Sir.
You know,
Corey also has great taste in microphones, too, I have to say.
That's right. I was actually eyeing yours up, too.
You know, that's kind of funny, talking about Costa Rica. I've been to Costa Rica once, but the last time I was down there would have been 10 years plus. And we stayed at a compound. We stayed at a hotel, nice hotel, but it was surrounded by barbed wire. So is it still that? Is it still like that down there? Or is it
not so much? No, I mean, it's changed a lot in 10 years. And there's a lot of areas, especially closer to the city, where they're super paranoid and you're going to see the big fences and the barbed wire. But I live out on the coast, on the beach. It's a completely different vibe there.
Yeah, I would imagine so. But that's a nice place to go be a snowbird. Perfect. Absolutely perfect. But anyway, we've had a busy, busy week in podcasting. And it just seems like every day there's something a little new that's popping up. But we want to talk about Corey's business. Rob, why don't you, Corey, go ahead and, introduce Podfly and or give people the 411 on you so they know who you are first and foremost.
Thanks. We're a podcast production company, short and sweet. We've been operating for just over 2 years now. Kind of came into it organically. Just a lot of folks were coming to me because I was the program director for an online radio station for a couple of years. And we'd moved our facilities out of Costa Rica. And people had come to us and said, hey, can we get on your network? Can you produce our shows? How can we do a podcast? And at that time, a lot of the stuff we were doing was very formatted. It wasn't going to work for them to come onto the network and us produce their content. So I started doing it on the side. And a business partner and I got together and said, there's enough of a market for this to justify actually trying to make a go of it with a business. And, now with the popularity of podcasts and everybody and their mother wants to get one, we found that there's a huge demographic of clients out there that are either those that aren't savvy enough to do it or might not be interested in doing it themselves, or those that have the cash to just throw at a production house to have it done for them. So for us, the business has just exploded over the last 2 years and we're finding that it's just growing and growing and growing.
So what kind of core services would you say are most people gravitated towards? Is it the consulting? Is it the actual production work side?
It's three parts. We do mostly pre and post-production for folks. So people coming in new to the space, they don't really know which kind of microphone should I get for my budget? How can I set up a show clock in a format? What's a good way to put together an intro, outro, and set up maybe my feed, that sort of thing. So we do a lot of the pre-production stuff for folks and the coaching, but not to a super high degree. We don't charge thousands upon thousands of dollars to sit down in a room. It's a couple of $100 to sit down with a consultant and get everything together and help you order the equipment. And then beyond that, once we get their show flow going, they get comfortable with their format, it's just them submitting content into the studio. And then our engineers, and we're spread out amongst three countries, our engineers go ahead and do all of the audio editing, post-production, and then put it up onto their feed, and they go forward from there. And we have show notes people in-house as well. So we have people that are looking for kind of that done for you, hands off all the way through. And anybody who wants to maybe go a la carte, they're like, I just want basic audio editing, to some high-end clients that say, I need you to post to my website. I need you to help me generate my social media tweets, all of that fun stuff. And then consulting as well. I do fly around quite a bit and meet with companies and Fortune 500s that are interested in doing podcasting and sit down with their team. It's usually their marketing or advertising team that's interested in getting into the space and helping them see what they need to do to get there.
Yeah, it's really interesting that you mentioned the marketing and advertising groups around the country. Are you seeing, I mean, what types of companies are you seeing kind of gravitate towards getting involved in podcasting? What's the typical scenario that you're seeing?
Just last weekend, I was in Toronto. I was invited in to meet with three different companies. And it's basically an incubator and a startup area in Toronto that's been set aside. And I met with three companies. Two of them I can't mention because of NDA. But another one was basically a company that profiles experts, doctors, lawyers, university professors. And what they're doing is accommodating a lot of these websites in helping them get a better message out on the profiles of the individuals that are featured. So for example, you are a doctor in a particular field and you have a profile page that explains all of your work, your published papers, what you're doing. In these cases, they're thinking it's kind of cool to have maybe three or four podcast episodes available as well, so people can more intimate with you and listen to you and hear your story being told in an interview format. So this is a really interesting space. I know that a lot of the guys over at Airbnb are talking about it. Facebook is dancing around the idea. And a lot of other major companies are saying, you know, we have a blog. Why don't we have a podcast? Because that's also a great way to tell your story and make it portable so people can carry around with them.
So what should a company or a brand do or position themselves as far as the kind of show that they produce? I know a lot of, I've talked to a lot of companies that are thinking about doing it as well. And it's like, well, they don't necessarily want to make it a big commercial for whatever they do. I mean, what's the direction that you're pointing people towards as far as around kind of brand related podcasting?
Yeah, it's a great point. I mean, if you have a Coca-Cola podcast, you don't want to listen to them talk about how great Coca-Cola is for 30 minutes every week. Yeah, it makes no sense. You know, but I was working recently with some of the folks over at Whole Foods, and they have an amazing sourcing department. They have people who go around the world to find the incredible products that they're bringing into their stores. And the stories that can be told of those journeys of getting around the world and getting into those locations to find and source those products are fascinating. The conversations they're having with distributors, even the travel and the trip that you're getting to some of these exotic locations makes for a good podcast. So the idea is finding a deeper layer to the company and understanding some of the people and the places that are behind some of those products that make it fascinating. You know, I saw actually a really interesting documentary once on Walmart and how incredible it is that their buying department goes around the world and finds and sources some of these amazing things that get on the shelves. So when you go into Walmart, you don't necessarily think about the incredible talent that's out there getting those products delivered to you. And those stories can be told in a variety of formats, and podcasting is certainly one of them.
And it's amazing too, from a business standpoint, to see at certain events where, you know, like for example, at CES, Best Buy comes in and the C parts for them because they have such big buying power. So, you know, those guys have got it pretty good because they, you know, they don't have to go looking too hard. Same thing with Amazon. So there should be some pretty good, like you said, some good stories around, you know, acquisition, finding new products, finding something cool. But imagine even a company like Costco would have, you know, some pretty cool stories because, you know, people, you know, battle to try to get on their shelves as well.
Well, yeah, there's actually, no question. I was just recently at an ad firm here in Montreal. And I was called in because they had a simple question, and it was, all of our advertising clients are coming to us and saying, we need to get into podcasting and we don't know what that means. And which is kind of exciting as a consultant and as a production company, because it means that we're given carte blanche in terms of what type of solutions we can provide for these guys and if it's going to be a good fit. But that's been the thing, you know, you guys know, especially on your show in the last year and a half, you know, with the ubiquity of podcasting now, everyone talking about it, every major media outlet at least pumping out one article a week on podcasting, a lot of these companies are saying, okay, why aren't we in the space and what do we need to do it? So now I think the challenge has been to bridge how can some of these companies get into the podcasting space without it being corporate, you know, keeping the purity of podcasting what it is and still telling the stories that people want to hear. Because ultimately, that's what it is. A podcast is just good storytelling. And people are going to be able to weed out the crappy, you know, advertorial podcasts pretty quickly. Whereas I think people, as savvy podcast listeners, might consider listening to a Whole Foods podcast, provided the content is given in a pure and narrative and more journalistic fashion as opposed to advertorial.
Yeah, you know, one thing that and it was a discussion point we're having on our team chat this matter of fact, it was yesterday. We and this kind of applies to this conversation. We relaunched a show, and it was basically it's a company show, but it's not going to be you know, a pitch show. And it's, you know, we're talking about new podcaster challenges, talking about giving some tips, talking a little news, giving some seasoned podcaster type of commentary, you know, with maybe just a little bit of company stuff going on, and not, you know, not necessarily, you know, go here and buy this type of a deal. And, you know, we, the argument basically was, is, okay, do we continue to call it PowerPress Podcast and keep it surrounded by the brand, or do we rebranded a new name and then have to really kind of start from scratch? And my argument really was, you know, we've got this established audience, a pipeline into them. We've explained how this, you know, media pipeline that's been feeding them business pitches up to this point is now changing. Very, you know, very upfront with that, told them that we wouldn't be intermixing that content in there, along with, you know, we would be sending out the business stuff on a different channel, in a different format. And, it is one of those, you know, especially when you have an established pipeline, to be, you know, kind of like get off one horse and get on another. It is a little bit interesting. And, but yet at the same time, you've got a community that pretty much trusts you. So you know, I think the transition from going from a pitching type program and giving news about a new product announcement to more informational is probably easier transition than go the other way. I don't even think you can, it's possible to go the other way, but, yeah, we kind of resolved it, but it took quite a bit of conversation back and forth on, you know, and we're a podcasting company, so, you know, you would think we would know.
Well, I think that that it's okay to talk about the company's products, and because oftentimes the core listener base of any show about a particular brand or whatever is going to be customers and people that are trying to use whatever service or product that you have. So you definitely want to intermix in there some commentary about how to optimize and use the services that the company provides. And, you know, I did the Zune Insider podcast for many years, and that was what we tried to do. We tried to dive into the backstories of what people in the company were doing around Zune and things like that. But we would also kind of sprinkle in there tips about how to optimize and how to do it better, not necessarily make it a pitch show to offer services or whatever, but really to, you know, offer good content around that kind of stuff. And also to go back to what we were originally talking about brands, I know Costco is a really good example, because Costco puts out a magazine today. They actually do exactly what we're talking about here, Corey. They do deep background written stories on customers, right? So you can totally see where you could take that same thinking around profiling customers and do that in the podcast form as well.
I think one of the big concerns, and it's a legitimate one on the part of many of these companies that we're working with now, is what is the potential reach? Because, you know, as podcasters ourselves, we're comfortable with that narrow market. We're okay with, you know, the 500,000, 6,000 listeners. Matters not to us. But to these companies, it matters an enormous amount because they need something they can put into a spreadsheet that looks fancy and good. It's got to have a big number that goes into that cell. You know, they want to see 100,000, 200,000 listeners to their podcast. And they now are facing exactly the same challenges that we all have as podcasters for the last 10 years. Yeah. Is marketing and reach and getting out to the number of people that they're going to want to, because they want to qualify that cost. You know, they don't want to just marginalize that expense and say, hey, you know, we'll throw $5,000 at a podcast this year and hope that some people listen to it. They want to throw $5,000 at a podcast for a year and hope that 250,000 people listen to it. So the challenges that we're facing in the marketing aspect of these shows is somewhat complex. And many of these large companies as well are not super eager because they're big boats. They don't move and turn very quickly to put, for example, a podcast tab on their website and then just dedicate a section of that site to it because that real estate for them is hyper valuable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I can totally see that. It's a challenge. I mean, so from a consulting agency, what do you kind of, what's the high level recommendation on that kind of stuff? Is it really making sure that the podcast is included in any kind of company communications, advertising? I mean, what's the recommendation that you guys are doing?
It's really managing expectations first and foremost, understanding in the first conversation, are you going to be comfortable with the fact that you might only have 2,000 or 3,000 listeners to that show?
If
they're not comfortable with that number, then the conversation can pretty much end. But if they are comfortable with at least getting there and knowing that this might be a slow grow, then we've got something to talk about. The second part of it is, and I think this is critical for some of these companies, is they have a tendency to throw out the whomever is maybe doing social media as the host of the show. They say, okay, well, you're in social media. You know all about that space because it's all the same thing. We'll give you a microphone and you go ahead and host the show. And unfortunately, it doesn't work that well. If you are not a good broadcaster, if you don't have an on-air personality, if you don't have a way of interviewing people that's going to be compelling and assembling a show, you're not going to be good at it. And, you know, quality, I think, is still king. If you don't have good content, you're not going to get a number of listeners. So I think that's the second thing as well, is we often advise them to, and we help them do this if necessary, recruit somebody who can do this professionally, because there are a lot of part-time broadcasters. There are a lot of great broadcasters who are young, who are coming out of college. There are a lot of retired broadcasters who can do this extremely well, and they've been doing it for 25 years. So bringing somebody like that into the fold means that the quality of the show is going to be a lot better, and it really ups their chances of growing an audience and a listenership.
Yeah, because it's, I mean, from what I think back to seeing companies do this, they typically, there's two ways of looking at it, right? You can either have an internal person do the show that's part of the company, or you can hire it out, right? What's your typical recommendation, or is it really based on what talent exists at the company?
It varies. We've worked with a couple small startup companies, you know, and they have a small team of 20, 25 people. And usually they're a young startup, they're funded, and one or two of them, maybe the CEO, is a super fascinating guy or girl, you know, and they really, when you talk to them on the phone, you can tell they're going to be really good on mic. They're going to draw out amazing interviews. They've got compelling stories to tell. And that's usually why they're also the CEO. They're that type of personality, and that's going to translate very well into a podcast. So in many of those scenarios, it's great. It's like, okay, Tim, you're awesome. You're 26. You're the CEO of an awesome startup company. You're going to be really, really good on mic. In other scenarios where it's a big Goliath company and they've got all of these departments, in those scenarios, first of all, you're looking at maybe 9 to 10 months lead time to even get this thing out the door before we even get to a conversation about a host. In those scenarios, I often start early with saying, let's try and recruit somebody to come into your company, study you, work with you, understand you very well from the corporate level, and then they can take over and do the podcast for you. All they need to do is basically approve the content that we're going to be doing, as opposed to doing the research and the interviews themselves.
Mm-hmm. You know, and you got a good point, Corey, and one thing that we're doing that is a little different is we've got a team member that did a little radio before, and she's new really to the podcasting space. She's been with us about 6 months. And our kind of approach was, we're going to let her host, but we're also going to pair her with a seasoned person to kind of help, not for a better word, help, but, you know, make sure the show keeps moving and on pace and you know, all the things that we feel are going to be necessary for a good show. But also at the same point, you know, our objective was a little different too. So we're unique in the situation where we want the new podcasters that are listening to understand that she's having some of the same challenges that they may be having and trying to cover that. So, you know, in from a polished company standpoint, you don't want to have that type of a dynamic. You want to have a dynamic that comes out strong from the very beginning. But I can see where a company, depending on their product line and what they're trying to accomplish, where that, you know, an opposite pairing might be good. From a production standpoint, especially if you're a type of a do company, it's something that you have to teach people and train and that type of stuff. I think that kind of a mixed pairing would be good.
I'd agree. And another consideration as well is if it's coming off hacky, your company looks hacky.
Right.
You know? And I think that's a real consideration. You know, without naming any names, there's a podcasting company that has a fairly popular podcast, I imagine, but the quality of the audio is horrible. It's almost unlistenable, and it drags, and it's super segmented, and it's, you know, it's a podcast that I would love to consume because I know the content's really good, but the audio is really terrible. And for me, it just reflects poorly on the company. It's like, this is your space, this is your industry, this is your message, and you can't get the most fundamental thing right, which is your podcast doesn't sound good.
Right.
So this is a concern, and especially if the content is not good. You know, if you're a big company and you're floating this thing out there and it looks like it's poorly put together, that can be a reflection immediately, even just subconsciously for the listener in terms of how you're operating your company itself.
Yeah, we took the time too, and, you know, I put together a good package for them, shipped it all in. We're having someone come in and actually do the setup and get it dialed in, you know, so... Whereas the Team All podcast, my goal was, number one, to make sure that we did capture the type of atmosphere I wanted. But at the same time, they're not going to be using a cheap mic. They're not going to be, you know, the pipeline is going to be good and something that, you know, I know the sound I'm looking for. And I think the sound of podcasts, and maybe this is a segue into a topic that I'm kind of been focusing on, and you know, this show and my regular show, you know, I went 10 years with tweaking and adjusting and, you know, making little things. And I finally got a comment from a good friend of mine out on the East Coast who really knows his stuff. He's really dialed in when it comes to the audio space. And he had taken my show, tore it apart from a Spectrum standpoint and said, look, here, 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 and here. You're blowing it. We need to change this, this, and this. And I, you know, over
Paul, is that who you're talking
about? Yeah, I'm talking about Paul Fagiani. And I worked with Paul for maybe a week and a half, 2 weeks, and back and forth. And in the end, I think the product that I'm putting out the door for personally is, oh man, at least 50% better from a sound and consistency standpoint. This show's tough because you never can dial it in exactly right because each guest has its own. Mike, you know, luckily, Corey, you know, you're coming in here, boom, and great. It's perfect, you know, but that isn't always the case with some of the guests. They're using a, you know, mic from a Mac or, you know, whatever they may be using to call in via Skype. So I'm sure that's a big part of your guys' business too, right, is taking and looking at people's audio and helping them get it cleaned up, scrubbed up, and do you get those types of deals where they still want to do it themselves, but they want a little help to get it dialed in?
Yeah, and we do a handoff process as well. You know, some people, we let people have the keys to their own car through the entire thing. So if they decide that they want to go either with another production service or they want to handle it themselves, sometimes they just need coaching to get things right. You know, we have a couple of clients we're working with right now that are actually seasoned podcasters, and they just want to up their game. They want better equipment. We want to do a little soundproofing in their booth. We want to help them with their editing process, and we don't keep any secrets. We're happy to show them what we do because these are industry standards, you know, and a lot of the things we've been doing have been broadcast standards for many years. Half my team comes from the broadcasting space, and they're migrating over to the dark side because, you know, they're seeing this is kind of where stuff is going. So for us, yeah, it's a lot of making sure that they're upping their game. We have a couple of folks, though. I mean, we can't do anything about a lot of the guests that are coming in, as you mentioned. As long as the host sounds great and as long as it's well-framed, then it's acceptable for a listener to have, you know, somebody coming in on an earbud set on Skype or somebody to come in on phone. As long as the content is there and the content is good and the host sounds good, we've been, you know, tuned to be comfortable with that type of audio since the days of radio. And even watching, you know, CNN, we're still watching on, you know, major networks, people Skyping in, people phoning in. That's the way it just is. But as long as the host is super tight and everything sounds as good as possible, then we're good to go. The biggest thing that we're working on right now, Todd, is killing us, is voice coaching, is helping some of these hosts get over their ums and their ahs and their you knows and their stammering because they just don't have the voice training to do it as broadcasters do. So I've become very hyper aware of it because I've been podcasting for 10 years. A lot of them still slip through, but that's just natural speech. That's the biggest thing that we struggle with, is a lot of people don't realize how much crutches there are in their speech patterns until they start listening back And they come to our company and they say, oh my gosh, okay, how much does it cost to remove all of the ums and the ahs from my hour and a half long program? They're usually shocked by how expensive that can get and how time consuming it is and how unnatural it can sound if it's not done well. But, you know, to your point, I think that's the biggest thing is number one, getting the audio great for the host. And then number two, now that we have a capture system for their voice that is super reliable and very detailed and very listenable, now what is their voice actually doing and how can we help them with that? And that's where we're struggling, honestly, right now in the company is finding ways to coach people in their voice training.
Well, here's a tip for you.
Yay.
What caused me to be a better podcaster was that right there, the camera. Having a camera on you and doing a little live, makes you a better content creator. You have to be prepared. That you can't fix live. Live goes out, it's done. So I think what happens is, I think content creators say, oh, I'll fix it in post because they're not live. But if they are live, they have to be more prepped, more on cue, and it may not happen over episode one live or on video, but it will definitely improve very, very rapidly because you don't want to be like, well, you don't want to look like an idiot. So you have to really step your game up to do live. Now, I've told people that, and they poo-pooed me a lot, but I'm telling you, if you start doing a live show, even if it's streamed live, not necessarily video, as long as you have a live component where people can listen and comment, it will definitely make you a better content creator because you have to be ready to go. And I know, I haven't done enough prep and I stumble over myself, it's really evident. And I go back and I say, oh, man, now, I'm one of the core group of people that don't edit ever. Take that back. Maybe 3-4 episodes over 1,000 plus episodes. I've done a little editing. And that's like maybe taking out a segment that maybe I totally destroyed. You know, I was totally wrong, got the piece wrong, and realized later. But generally it's encode and be done. So
I have to agree. You know, I did for 2 years, I did a call in online radio show. It was called This Week in Costa Rica. And I had a Comrex system with 4 phone lines in the US. It was live. It was on a play deck. We had a show clock. I had posts that I couldn't hit. I had a producer in my ear. And it was an amazing training for me to get very good on mic, get very good on air, and understand that exactly what I did to tape is what the feed is going to be and what the show is going to be at the end of it. There was no editing because, again, we were stuck to a show clock. So it was training by fire.
So
yeah, that's all I'm doing now, too, is live, too. You know, we're working at Spreaker. We have a live streaming platform. And so that's what I do for my Spreaker live show every Wednesday. And it really works out well. I mean, I've been really, really happy with it. I started doing this stuff in our broadcast radio station and did that for many years as well. It's scary as hell being live, though. I mean, things don't always work right. guests don't call in. I also spent a lot of years in pre-production, pre-recording of my shows. And I tend to agree with you guys that you tend to get a little more relaxed when you're in a recording situation than when you're live. And it's a completely different kind of vibe and you know, you bring to the program a different type of energy too. I mean, it's hard to be at that peak level on a pre-recorded program. And I found myself kind of struggling with that at times for the many years that I did pre-recordings. Just because, you know, psychologically it's a challenge. We're live like this show. I get up in the morning, I come down here, I'm keyed up, I'm ready to do the show, and I know that when the show's done, I don't have to do any post-production. I mean, I used to spend hours and hours, and my wife used to spend hours and hours doing post-production on our radio show that we did. And it's just like, I don't do any post-production anymore, and it's wonderful.
You know, here's some advice, though. If you're a post-production ninja and you're spending 4, 5, 6, and 10 hours in post-production, hire Corey. Yeah, let them do your post-production, and you'll have a show in 5 years. You won't, if you're spending 5 to 10 hours in post-production now and you're doing a show, you're not, you won't be around very long. You're because life.
Well, you're going to burn out.
Life gets in the way. The wife, the kids, the girlfriend, the boyfriend, whatever the, you know, whatever the flavor of the day, it will, they'll be like, why are you in this room looking at the screen for 10 hours? You know, really? And if you, especially if you're not making a lot of money, what, you know, what are you working for, pennies on the hour? So, you know, if you have a desire to keep your sanity, hire Corey. I if I had edit, I'd be done. Yeah, stick a fork in me over a week. I'd be like, screw this. I'm out of here. I couldn't do it.
Yeah, I used to do an independent music podcast. I started way back in like 2005. And for me, it was critical to actually create an artificial show clock. I had a 1 hour hard out every single show. And we'd spin maybe 10 or 11 indie tunes and then do a little talk in between. And I set everything up. I set the clock up. I had the posts. I had the bumpers, the works. And the reason being was post-production is because I didn't want a long rambling show that we would edit. And it's like, oh, let's not play that tune. Let's redo that section. And then spend 3-4 hours in post-production when I could be out on the golf course working on my short game. So for me, it was a matter of just setting up the artificial constraints that one made you a better podcast host, because I think you had what Rob mentioned, a really good energy that you're bringing to it because it's going to happen. And second, Todd, what I used to do is exactly what you mentioned. I used to broadcast it out live at the same time because it was easy to do. It was easy to say, you know, Sunday at 2 p.m., we're going to be doing this indie show and you can tune in here. So that it meant for post-production, all I was doing was rendering, tagging, yeah, doing my show notes, uploading, and then I could go and work on my putting.
Yeah. And
which is really what you wanted to be doing.
Right? That's really what I wanted to be doing, yeah.
And I get poo-pooed a lot on this next topic, too. I, you know, it's, okay, so I see what you're using. You're using an SMB7. Rob's got an SMB7. You've got a great-sounding audio pipeline. It's a sound that you probably worked to perfect. Rob has too. I've got my pipeline here that I have. And I invested in a pipeline, audio pipeline, that, number one, didn't have to require a lot of tweaking in post. It was almost ready to go. I mean, very, very close. It's like 10 minutes of work to get my show ready to encode. I run basically three things, and the last thing I run it through a phonic and I'm done. But it's, you know, it's it, if you invest here, you save time on that clock, on that post editing, in a big way.
Well, I can speak to that because I was a musician in a former life and then translated that over into becoming an audio engineer and music producer. And in all of these scenarios, it was the same thing. You know, when an A&R rep for a record company would go look for a band, they weren't necessarily looking for much more. The songwriting was a thing, but that's fixable. The thing they were always looking for was their sound. What does the band sound like? Because they knew if a band sounds really good, we can bring them in the studio and we can capture that. It's all about source. You know, you can't get on a mic and have a terrible voice and not be able to speak very well and expect to be able to do anything with it in post. And you mentioned as well with the pipeline, the same idea. Get it into a controlled space where you can control how that audio is going to be inputted into your machine so that what's going to tape, as we used to say, is almost ready to go out in production. I'm the same way. I have a very, very simple setup here that I find is effective and clean, goes into Adobe Audition. And then from there, I have a couple of presets, you know, a multiband compressor that I use, yeah, just to warm things up a little
bit. Me too.
Yep. And maybe I'll run it through like a low pass filter or a gate just in case, because sometimes you never know, you're in a space, there's going to be a little bit of ambient noise you want to cut out in between your speaking sections. But then that's it. Everything's leveled up and ready to go. So that's the idea, is that, you know, we used to say in the studio, and I guess maybe the PG version is, you can't polish a turd. And that's really what it comes down to, is to, right, make sure that whatever your input source is the, yeah, highest quality possible, so that it makes the post-production sound better. The more you have to do in post, the more artificial it becomes. You know, if you have something that's going in clean, it's going to come out clean. And that's, well, ultimately the best way. That's the investment, I agree, you've got to make up front.
And, you know, quality in, quality out is the old saying.
And sometimes, yeah, you can't fix, yeah, it in post. You know, I had a situation about,
yeah, you can't,
3 months ago where I do live streaming events. I go and do weddings, retirements. I'm here on in Hawaii, and obviously a lot of military retirements. I'm prior military, so I have a lot of connections. So guys know I've got this gear, and they're like, hey, I'm having retirement. My family can't come. Can you live stream it? So I go into situations where I don't know exactly the what they have for. It's usually a PA system, and sometimes you get a tap off that. Sometimes you don't. But, you know, I mean, doing this big retirement ceremony, everything's good, and you know the guy is twiddling with the PA system, and instead of turning the pot he meant to turn up, he turned me all the way down, and so my feed goes bad, and I'm like, oh my God, what am I gonna do? So I flip to camera, you know, the camera mics, and it's like these things pick up everything, and we're in a hangar. Lots of ambient noise. It was just no way to fix it. I mean, I was devastated, but some chucklehead. So now that changed my whole flow up too. I don't trust anyone anymore. So I went 100% wireless with my own rigs. No one can touch my pots. And so sometimes stuff, I had to tell that guy, sorry, here's the video, the audio. You know, it sounds like it's in a, you know, in a hall with a, you know, guys shouting at a camera from 200 feet away. It was bad.
We've had our share of content that's coming to the studio that we have to reject.
Yeah.
We have to go back to the client and say, look, there's two ways we can approach this. Number one, we can do some post and you can do an apology pre-roll on your podcast right. And let people know, hey, I'm sorry about the audio.
Or you do over.
In a lot of cases where they've got their A-list guest, they can't do it over and they have right. to do their apology yeah. pre-roll. But yeah. this is an interesting part of the education aspect and the pre-production that we have with clients that's very tricky is educating them on the equipment and what it actually does as opposed to where we want you to set it and forget it. Because people move things, people bump things, they don't know what it is. And then we get that emergency call and their gain has been at 100% and they send in this big crackly distorted file. So that's the tricky part as well, is that it's not just shipping them gear and saying, here, set it this way and then just walk away. It's like you need to help people understand exactly what each of these pieces of equipment is doing so that when they are moving these knobs and they are manipulating that sound, that they have a fundamental understanding of what's happening. And that's a very, very lengthy process to get that right. So I think that's why a lot of people go with, hey, let's just get the ATR-2100, plug it in, and then go for it. Because the reality is, I've got one in my drawer as well. Because the reality is you can tell with some clients and with some podcasters that they're just not going to have the savvy to be comfortable with setting up a DBX-286X. You know, they right. just don't want to do it. And they're not going to even know what it does other than it's long, it's silver, and it's on my desk.
Yeah, these are really, really good sounding mics for $40. I mean, it was amazing. They were on sale and they support the USB and the XLR outputs. So
no comment.
I can't lie. Look, I'm an audiophile. I'm an audio engineer. Those things piss me off every day of the week because I spent a lot of money on a lot of gear over a lot of years. And I've got a couple clients who send in their tape with that mic. And what we're able to do with it in post is pretty darn good, especially when you consider, though, guys, I mean, 90% of the podcast listeners are on $30 Apple earbuds.
Right.
Right. We're not all walking around listening on our hi-fis or on our studio monitors. So for the majority of the audience that these guys are reaching, that's more than acceptable.
I edit with earbuds because I figured that's what most people are going to be listening in. I edit for the earbud. I don't have studio speakers. So, you know, it's just a little different mindset and that's something I implemented. But yeah, I don't know. I think that if you get the sound you want and you're happy, that's the main thing. You know, and if you're not getting feedback from your audience that's negative, you know, I think that's the ultimate goal. You know, when you're getting emails, the audio's too low, the audio's too high, you're clipping, those types of discussions are not what you want coming back from your audience. Because if one heard it, 100 heard it, but only one emailed you enough because he cared about you, yeah, the 100 were just mad. So you can, they'll forgive you for video, but they won't forgive you for audio.
I got to say, I've got one client and he drives our engineers bonkers because he wants everything to be mastered to -0.5 dB, which is like, okay, great. Which means he's just running hard limiter, super compressed. I mean, an ear bleeding podcast. And I've reminded him a couple times. It's like, these things have a volume knob. That's you right. can actually turn your podcast up if you want yours louder. He's like, no, I want my show to be 50% louder than every podcast on iTunes. It's like, well, all right. Just don't tell anybody we did it, please.
Yeah. And there's a few that are like that that I'm familiar with. Matter of fact, a few that have gotten some recent discussions in some Google Plus groups that have Earbleed podcast. Absolutely. I hope you're not editing that one. If you are, I'm sorry that they made you do that. Because, yeah, there's just a few out there that'll make you go, wow. You know, and I think the tools have gotten better. You know, that's one thing. And I'm happy to hear you using Adobe Edition. I'm a big Adobe Edition fan myself. Don't get me wrong, Audacity does a good job. GarageBand does as well. But if you want to have a pro show, you need pro tools. I don't think most audio producers throughout the United States uses GarageBand for their audio production. I might be wrong, yeah. But I don't think so.
Yeah.
No, and when I was doing a lot of radio production, I used to work in audio editing for ad commercial houses, and we were all using Adobe Audition as well because we could swap our files around easily. We were all working in the same format. You'd go into any radio production studio and they're running Adobe Audition. I think I go back and forth between that. If I'm doing something more compositionally and I'm doing something a little more detailed and laying it out, I might jump into Logic. But generally speaking, everything I'm doing is in Adobe Audition because it's a gold standard, and the workflows that are built into that software really are purpose-built for exactly what we're doing. And the tools and the presets that are there already are amazing. You know, I don't find myself having to go hunting down a bunch of odd plugins. I don't need to get all these weird things to convert things. Everything's already purpose-built to it. And you know what? I got to say, I love their subscription model as well because I can put my entire team on Adobe Audition. We all share the same subscription. And it also means that through Adobe Cloud, if we want to, we can also collaborate very easily on projects, which is really powerful.
I'm sure you're familiar with this company right here, New Blue FX.
Mm-hmm.
They have some remarkable plugins. You know, I have their entire package, but you know, I find I don't use them. I don't use their tools because Audition has everything in it that I need. And very rarely do I have to step out of the box and find something third party that's plugged in that I need to use. And another thing too is the Adobe folks are approachable. You know, I went to an event, and it wasn't a big event. It wasn't like NAB, but there was an Adobe guy there, and he was demoing. And I'm like, listen, I'm having a problem here. And he's like, oh, man, we moved this over here. Let me show you how to do that now. So their tech support, too, is like, whew, it's smoking. And you know, it's not you don't have to do it face-to-face, but you can do it by email. Their support forms are good. You know, they want the product to work for the customers that are using it. And you're right, that subscription model is money.
If only we could get them to answer the question of why I can't increase playback speed. that would make my day, because ultimately that's the one thing that I do miss. We do a lot of passive listening when we're doing audio editing. If it's not detailed, we're looking for large errors.
Right.
And even just to bump up the speed a little bit, especially when we're doing audiobooks, it would be tremendously valuable. But for some reason, they're just not interested in doing that. I don't know why.
And you're on a one for one, then you just, you know, you can't, that doesn't help your, you know, you want to be able to increase your production or decrease your production time, and you can't, so.
Can't do it.
No. Yeah. Yeah. I use SoundForge is what I use. I've been using that for years and years. And I'm not saying it's better than Audition by any stretch of the imagination. I don't know if you guys played around with SoundForge.
I've never used it at all, Rob. I can't speak to it. Never.
I used to use the Sony Suite quite a bit. Actually, I loved that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I just don't use it a lot of post-production anymore, so those tools are just not something I worry about too much. I mean, I do it on occasion, but it's kind of unusual these days.
So I know, Corey, you guys were out at Podcast Movement, and a lot of that crowd over there uses coaches, and a lot of the coaches are recommending people to hire people to, you know, get someone to do their post-production. And I know that some people would actually recommend you going overseas and finding someone. And I think that kind of scares me for any project, whether it be software or, you know, and I'm sure some of those people are great. But, you know, what was the response for you guys at Podcast Movement, because I'm sure, you know, that crowd was probably prime for you finding new clients.
Yes and no. You know, we did Podcast Movement both years. I did a talk this year. We went to NMX as well and vended there. But for us, it's not a sales play. That's really not what we're there to do. It's a branding play. It's you know, making sure that people are aware of what we're doing. It was the same, you know, I'm friends with Daryl Darnell over at Pro Podcast Solutions, and he and I run very similar companies in very similar ways. And he's a super talented guy. And he and I are both kind of working toward the same objectives in this space. But going to a place like Podcast Movement, it's not really a place you want to close people. At least that's not our experience. It's a place where you want to develop an initial relationship with people or strengthen relationships that we've had with clients or of other vendors that we've known and worked with in a variety of ways. So for us, it's just a branding thing. It's making sure people know, hey, we're still here, we're growing, we're having fun doing it, and we want to relate to you more and help you if we can. But we don't walk around with like a credit card swiper and hope that we're going to close a bunch of clients. You know, that's not the objective there.
And I didn't mean it to sound that way, but you did, I'm sure, picked up a lot of new leads. So, you know, my thought process is that you would have been very successful at that show and picking up new clients. So
yeah, that's a great point. You're right, because there are a lot of, especially the networks, you know, we do a lot of network clients, and they're our favorite clients because, you know, we have one point of contact, we have one set of expectations, and that can turn into, you know, 8, 9, 10 different shows that we're producing for them. So we did pick up a lot of network relationships there. And similarly, the idea that I mentioned, we really like building relationships with companies like Spreaker, companies like, you know, Raw Voice and Blueberry, because it's nice to press the flesh with people at the end of the day. Yep. And we have clients there that we've been servicing for 2 years that we'd never met in person that actually came to Podcast Movement to shake our hands and get to know the team that's behind what they're doing. But I think you're right. You know, a lot of folks who came to Podcast Movement this year were, some of them were sent there by their company to learn about podcasting, you know, and it's a good opportunity for them to go back with a business card and a brochure and say, okay, yeah, we don't have to go through all of the kludge solutions that are necessary to make their podcast happen. There might be sort of a one-stop shop where we can cut a monthly check and somebody's going to take care of it. But I think the other thing too is that we always advocate that not only can we do it for you, there's a high probability that we're going to do it better. And I think that really helps as well.
You know, for a number of years, and I haven't done one this year, is I was doing it's basically a podcaster boot camp. It was a week. Go in and have I've done as many as 60 before at one time, and basically have everything there. They would show up, and by the time we ended the week, that we would went through and done their first show. All their gear would be there. We'd put it together. You know, it really was a big kind of like, let's get you going this week. You know, that was the plan, and have the right people there and have some of the same exact conversations. I haven't done any this year, largely because I've just been too busy. So one thing just from a business perspective that you may want to consider is, you know, I was very successful in doing those type of events. So as you guys grow as a business, you know, I would recommend you think about doing, you know, having a location, going to some city and say, okay, we're going to be here for 3 days. If you want to come in, we're going to get you up to speed, or 5 days or whatever it is. It's going to cost you X number of dollars. I think you guys could almost find, you know, it's a way to grow your business too, because you end up with additional clients, even though you're there mostly giving training initially, you know, some of it, you know, translates again into a bigger business place. So there's a need, you know, and I, like I said, I've been too busy to do any, and it's not that I haven't wanted to. It's just been, things have been crazy. So
idea. There's something though that frightens me a little bit about it, Todd. And I love the idea of getting together with for 3 days in a conference room or something and working on equipment training, voice training, all of the things, and getting people up to their launch. But we have to be really careful in terms of what the market can bear on price, because to do something like that can be expensive.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I just, on a personal, moral, ethical level, I can't charge someone $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 to come spend 3 days with me to go home and they have no marketing arm of their podcast and get 300-400 downloads and go, I just sunk $6,000 into spending 5 days with this guy.
You have to have
I've got 300 listeners.
Yeah, you have to have a follow-on plan, and you have to set expectations. So that's all part of it, for sure.
Yeah, sure.
So, you know, don't get me wrong. And it, you can do it cheaper than that if you have scale. Now, if you don't have scale, it costs a lot. You know, one time I went in and just did one company for a week. And you're going to come in and have me come in for a week and train like three people for a week. You know, that's going to cost you some serious bucks. But at the same time, there is an expectation of what the end result is. And I think if, as long as the companies know that, they're cool. But that, you know, that's the hurdle you have to, as you grow your business, you have to figure out how you're going to navigate that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the idea too, we've been approached by a number of different individuals who want to kind of glom onto to Podfly and our success and our growth. And leverage that brand to create these masterminds and these conferences and these excursions and all of this stuff. And I get it. You know, look, we have a lot of clients who have unlimited funds and they don't care. They'll spend $25,000 a year to be part of some ridiculous mastermind where they go heli-skiing and talk about how to improve their business. Good for you. But again, it's not a space I'm interested in getting into because I don't think that podcasting is that big. And I don't think that it's going to be for some time. And I hate to see even the wealthiest wasting their money.
Well, I made a comment the other day. I saw that someone had a $5,000 for a 1-day podcasting course. And I said in Facebook in another chat session, I basically said, okay, take that $5,000, buy yourself a round trip ticket to Honolulu, stay in a 5-star hotel, or just stay in a hotel on the beach in Waikiki. And see all our sites, spend your money. And then one day of that trip, you come spend it with me. We'll get your gear ordered. We'll get you set up. We'll get your show going. And you'll still go home with money in your pocket. So it's I agree as well that there are people that are willing to spend that kind of crazy cash. That's a relatively new thing. Podcasters are like, you mean I got to pay $7 for my hosting? We went past that stage a little bit.
Yeah, no, there's no question. And look, we all know who you're talking about and what that space is, and I get it. And we pick up a lot of the aftermath of that, believe it or not. We get a lot of the people who have gone through the ringer in some of these scenarios and are looking for some real answers now and looking for some real solutions that are reasonably priced. And ultimately, I think it's a combination of understanding what's a fair expectation to set for the customer.
Yep.
What is a price point that you can set that the market can bear? And more importantly, what's just a reasonable amount of money for the service that they're getting? Mm-hmm. You know, Daryl over at Pro Podcast Solutions says it extremely well. He said, I'm helping you buy your time back. What's your time worth to you? And I like approaching it that way as well, as to say, you know, this is going to be a time-consuming process. If you want, we can do it for you, and this is what we think it's worth.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think the thing that's really important is, I mean, this is a creative endeavor. Not everybody is going to find huge success.
Right.
There's no way you can coach somebody to be a 200,000 or 300,000 download podcaster.
Right.
It's you know, you either have that talent or you don't, or you just sort of work so hard to get it done. And I'm not sure that coaching is going to get you there. It's going to build the foundation. It's kind of like, you know, I spent a lot of years playing sports and training and getting coaching and getting, you know, really focused and disciplined on the craft or the skill set or the basic skills is really all you're teaching. What they do with those skills is not something you can teach. So it's, you know, I think it's about setting expectations, definitely. And I think a lot of the marketer podcasts out there, the masterminds or whatever, they tend to play to the emotional side of this, right? Of success and being able to make money on this and live this, you know, this rich lifestyle and travel and have a lot of fun and not focus on the core principles all the time. And I think it's really kind of makes it not so credible, because not everybody's going to find success doing this. But that doesn't mean that the value that you bring as a trainer or as a consultant or whatever doesn't have the value that you're charging for. It actually does, but it's up to the individual to actually convert it into something that's of value.
And last time I checked, the failure rate on shows haven't changed that much. They're about
exactly
the same.
Right.
Yeah, it's pretty high.
That's exactly right. Yeah, the numbers are the same. The mean number of downloads that you're seeing for shows is the same. You know, our most successful clients that we have are the ones that are dragging an audience into their podcast already. They have notoriety in their own space, and their podcast is just another arm of what they are and what they're doing. I've never worked with anybody who came purely into podcasting and became popular because of it. That is just so incredibly rare that if anyone is telling you that that's a reasonable expectation, turn around and run the other way.
You know, I think too, there is a method to the madness in being able to build an audience. And it is purely a long haul. And for the majority, high majority of content creators, this is not, you know, if you get success overnight, God bless you. And thank goodness you did, you know, because and you should thank your lucky stars because
you're rare
and it takes a lot of work to be top. But you know what? I don't think everyone's goals in this space, and this is why this space is so much different than any other space, is I think for the vast majority of people, the expectation is I don't care that I'm a smaller show. I'm mm-hmm. having fun. I'm putting out content that I like, building my reputation. It's not because they wanted 50,000 or 100,000 people or 200 or 250,000 people listening to their episode.
Yeah, I know shows that have been doing regular episodes for 10 years that haven't even cracked 1,000 downloads yet, and they're still doing it.
And they probably have a great relationship with their audience and are always chit-chatting with them. You know, I know a lot of my audience members, you know, the ones that communicate with me on a regular basis, you know, it's like they're part of my family, essentially.
Podcasting growth is a long game, I think, in part because it's about agency. And in these cases, it's who's talking about you. When you're talking about yourself in these scenarios, listen to my new show, look what I'm doing, me, me, me.
Yeah,
you're really not going to get a lot of attention because guess what? You don't know a lot of people.
Right.
You might have 700 friends on Facebook, but you know only 10 of them even listen to podcasts. It's about having other people refer to you and talk about you that makes podcasters' audiences grow. You know, I'm looking at, I'm dating a girl right now who is, you know, studying clinical psychology. And she just found out that I'm like a podcast producer. And she's like, I've heard about these podcasts. What are they? And the first thing that she does is she goes on Facebook and asks her friends, hey, which podcasts should I listen to? Mm-hmm. And those are the ones that are starting to grow. And those are the ones that are becoming popular. And the good news is that as, you know, podcasting is becoming more popular in common, you know, conversations, it's less about everyone just going and looking at the top 10 in iTunes and subscribing to those. It's more now people are saying, you should look at this because it's very specific to what you're into and I listen to it. But the point I'm trying to make is really it's always agency. It's social marketing, but not by you.
Right.
It's the organic social marketing by people who like what you have to say and find someone else who does like it. It's the same as I always liken podcasts to good books, is that if you find a really good book that you love, you can't wait to tell two or three other people you know that would like it to read that book. It's the same thing with a podcast, and that's a slow grow.
And I always, you know, that's, oh man, you and I are brother from another mother.
word of mouth is so powerful.
Yeah, it's all of it. You know, and we all tell our audiences, and we should tell this audience, go tell your fellow podcasters about this show. Because you know, we got to tell them to do that and remind them to share. Sometimes we get something and we're like, oh, this is mine. And you're like, you want to hold it close. And we have to remind people this is free. This is, you can share this with other people and say, tell people what's great or what you hate. And we hopefully don't get too many of those. But it's really true. It's absolutely, you know, that's what's built my audience.
It's the indie band effect for the audience, though, too. Yeah. We have to be careful of, because they discover a band that they love that nobody's ever heard of, and they can keep them in their pocket. You know, you can go buy those records and not tell anybody and listen. It makes it makes you ultra cool because you've got this special thing that nobody knows about that makes you a little bit more hip than anybody else. And podcasting is dangerous in that respect because it is such an intimate relationship that the audience is developing with the host, that you don't necessarily want to give it away. Like, I've been listening for about a year now to You Are Not So Smart by David McRaney. And I've spoken to him. We communicate on Twitter. I love his show. And when people ask me, hey, what's a really good podcast I should listen to? There's a moment where I stop and I go, okay, here's one that I really, really like and you should listen to. And I don't know what psychologically is going on there other than I feel like I have some sort of possession over that show. I don't want people involved in my little special relationship with Dave McGraney and his show. So I think that's something that happens with a lot of podcast listeners as well, as they've got their tight little crew of shows on their phone and they don't necessarily want to tell other people what they're listening to.
And a lot of that, I think, also belongs, it's about a privacy slash.
Yeah.
You and I, we know each other, but do you really know me? Mm-hmm. And do I really want you to know me? Because it's about geopolitical. It's all that stuff that, you know, we're on the water cooler. You know, you may know someone is of one political affiliation or another, or you may know someone is of one religious affiliation or another, but it's not something that you do a deep dive into. Yeah. You just, you know, it's, you know, those types of topics are just kind of like skirted around. But when you share something with someone, you're like, man, this guy, you know, I'm learning a lot more about Corey because he recommended this show. So I think that's part
of it.
There's
some psychological things going on there. And there's some topics in the podcasting space that people aren't going to want to word of mouth share with others that they're listening to. There are shows out there that are talking about things that may be a little embarrassing or something like that to share with other people. So I definitely agree.
It's funny, we did, I did a podcast series a little while back with Jessica Rhodes. It's called The Podcast Producers. And Todd, you were on it. And
yeah.
We actually spoke a lot about the podcasting space, but in a different way. You know, we created like a 10-part narrative series and blasted it out all at once. And in speaking to a lot of the podcasters, this was an interesting thing as well, is we were talking to Mary and Blake Larson. And in many scenarios, when they were talking about the intimate aspects of their relationship, as a married couple, they didn't want to tell any of their people in their personal circle that they were even doing a podcast. You know, they had thousands of listeners out there who were listening to their show, but none of their close friends knew they were actually doing it until they happened upon it. So even in that, some of the podcasters want to be able to intimate some of these ideas and speak very deeply on things that matter to them, but don't want even their friends to know what they're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
It is an interesting dynamic with us humans. We are so weird.
Complex is probably the other word for it, right?
Yeah.
A lot of stuff going on. So, Corey, your company does a lot of different types of things for podcasts. I mean, even show notes and things like that. I mean, you guys have a very unique approach to show notes, or is there a variety of approaches based on what the clients are looking for? Why don't you talk about that a little bit?
We have a set format that we use. It's more like a wireframe that we recommend, and then we build off of that. And mm-hmm. One of the things that we did initially is when we were starting to do just audio production, we had more and more people coming to us and say, hey, can you do show notes? Can you do web posting? Can you do all these a la carte services? And the answer to all these questions when people want to give you money is yes. And then second to that is like, okay, how are we going to actually do that now? And one of the first things that I think was key, and I maintain this philosophy, is that we do everything in-house. We outsource nothing. If we have to outsource, we just don't do it because we want to have tight control over the process and quality all the way through. So for show notes, what we did is we actually started working with people who are great bloggers, great writers, people who do this all day long, and also podcast fans and listeners. So people who either podcast themselves or love listening to podcasts. And we found amazing, and for some reason, I always call the copy department the girls because it's not sexist. They just all happen to be women because I think by nature, they're better at it, frankly. And for us, it was just a matter of saying, what is the best way to deliver some of the information in this show to the listener? Obviously, you want to go for a good title. Obviously, you want a good subtitle that goes along with it. And you want it to be SEO friendly. And we do some keyword searches to see if we can make something that's going to be good that in that regard. Though, again, the value only lies in their web posting. It doesn't lie, obviously, in their iTunes, because the SEO in iTunes is a joke. And then from there, it's a good descriptive paragraph that gives a listener an obvious indication of what's about to happen in the show. But what we've been innovating is really those time-stamped key takeaways. And I've been working with some of the podcast player folks to make sure that those are active timestamps. So for example, you'll see maybe 15 takeaways in a show. You can click on the timestamp and it advances the player directly to that portion. because we have a lot of drifters on the internet who come through and they see, oh, this podcast is about this. They want to go and hear them speaking on that specific section before they commit to the show. So that timestamp can take them there and say, yeah, when I get into the meat of this content, the rest of the show is probably going to be what I want to hear. And then from there, it's as easy as, you know, we're finding the outbound links, anything that's mentioned. And then we follow up with those, you know, two or three tweetables, like those quotes that are super powerful that came out of the show. We extract those as well to give them to be used in social media. So it's really helping them market their show in a variety of ways with just one simple RTF file. And the copy department is doing, you know, complete listening through the show. They're listening in real time to the show, making notes, refining them, and delivering back to the client. And it helps us too because, you know, we manage a lot of their RSS feeds in their hosting service. So they want us to do the ID3 tag and the uploading and the posting. So in that case, it's great because we have it in-house. Back to my original point is that we don't have to go to some strange virtual company that's 12 hours ahead of us in the Philippines, do the copy revision, make sure that all the spelling is right, and then get it out there. We can turn it around a lot quicker when we do a three-day process. Get the audio in, do the post-production, do the show notes, do quality control and post to the web. So we, interestingly enough, because you mentioned show notes, have been labeled as somewhat of innovators in this space because we're now getting companies coming to us and hiring us just to do show notes because we're doing it in a way that's hyper effective for their marketing.
Let me talk a little bit about that too, because that's been my secret weapon for many, many years. And I, Rob, you know, I've been a hardcore on show notes for the beginning. Yeah. And, podcasters listening, if you're not doing effective show notes, you might as well, you know, you're throwing away all that value that Google gives you. But let me give you an example of how effective show notes can be. When we go to the Consumer Electronics Show, we take a team and we do 250 interviews during a week. During that week, Engadget, Gizmodo, everyone and their brother is posting from that show, and they're trying to get the content up. We have, largely because of budget and time, we do all the live, we do all the recording at the show, but we come home after and do the post-production work and get the videos up over usually 4 to 6 weeks, maybe sometimes as many as 8 weeks. We put the content up a little bit every day. But what we've learned over 10 years of doing that show, and I'm going to tell you, this is gold, folks, is that we take the time to write a full blog post. Now, I'm going to bring up on the screen just one of the articles that we did. This is an interview that we did with D-Link. Did a D-Link on the AC3200 Ultra Wi-Fi router. So everything here is about a review and about the information about that router. Okay? It's loaded with information that Google just absolutely loves. Down below is the sponsor information along with the information from the interview itself. So when we put this up online, we then very specifically email the person that we've interviewed. We email the company. We email the PR department. We email every contact that we have at D-Link that basically will give us some links back from either their press page or from the person's blog. Tie that together with a great write-up. I do 60, 65 million views on 200 to 250 videos. Now, think about that for just a few minutes and understand the value in putting together good show notes. We may not be first, but I absolutely guarantee you that I win the race in the end. And this is not just day one. Some of these products are at the time when we do the interview, they are not to market yet. So as soon as they come to market, I've already been interlaced into Google for weeks. They do that Google search, and guess who comes up on top? And to take it a step further, not only is this posted on our Tech Podcast primary page, but a separate whole new write-up is done on each and every one of the hosts that go to the shows. So we don't have cut and paste and put those on each show, because we have a whole team there sharing content. They each get their own individual workup. Is it a lot of work? Oh my God, you have no idea. But the value we end up in the relationships and the interview with CEO, CIO, this is his baby. They are going to make sure you get links back. And if you get links back from the source and the tie-in with Google, it's like money in the bank. So if anyone's doing conventions, this is how you do it. And this is how you gain huge, huge, huge numbers from the content. But the same thing applies for podcasts.
Yeah, it's an entire holistic content marketing strategy. You know, show notes are only a very small component of it. Your podcast should only be a 1% component of it ultimately as well. You know, last night I was just laying on the couch, flipping around on my iPad. And I think it was maybe Rainmaker or something showed up with some of these really interesting, short, compelling articles about podcasting and what they're doing and that kind of thing. But the only way that I'm becoming aware of it in that space is because they have a blog post. They have good content that's being aggregated by Zeit or by Flipboard or what have you, and then being delivered to me in that fashion. It's then putting me basically in a funnel that might end up being a listener to a podcast. And that's the idea, is that it's this larger, and this is how we kind of advise our clients as well. Think of the podcast as part of your marketing strategy, mm-hmm. but a small part that's near the bottom of the funnel for those that really, really love what you're doing and want to drill down even further into it. But have it available to the people that are coming across Google and scanning stuff, because everyone on this show right now can say that iTunes is practically useless. There's just no value in it whatsoever.
But there is ways to now... And we've done a lot of work on this. And I agree that not everyone's going to iTunes looking for a show. But there are ways to tweak iTunes listings. And we have found great success in being able to have shows be found in iTunes, especially on an episode level basis, by implementing some relatively simple SEO stuff in their RSS feed that mm-hmm. doesn't necessarily show up in their on their website. So... But, you know, who goes into iTunes looking for a specific episode? Not that many. But if they do, they're going to find them. At the same time, you want your Google stuff to be, like, top-notch.
Yep. Yeah, there's no question. And, I mean, who goes into iTunes looking for a specific topic or an idea or an answer to a question?
Sometimes people go show searching and they find shows that way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So if they're looking for a show and you have an episode on a specific topic, that is a capture point. Again, it's part of the funnel process, but it's just another little piece of the pie of stuff that you should do really to build exposure and build findability.
If that's your objective.
Well, if you're trying to get to grow an audience and you're trying to get people to at least sample the show, you know, you have to be found first. If you're not found, you know, what's the use of mm-hmm. doing the show, unless you have a lot of organic traffic already coming to your website. You know, some of the best podcasters were originally bloggers because they understand the value of that blogging component versus the, you know, tied together with the podcasting component.
Yeah,
Todd, you've always said it's the combination of audio, video, and text.
Right.
You know, ideally, you need to do all three because they're all synergized on each mm-hmm. other.
It's a trifecta of data there, you know, of information. It's a visual. It's, you can hear it. You can read it. You know, it's really, really important. I go to podcasters' web pages and there's a sentence of what they have done in the show. And you're like, you know, please, you know, what are they thinking? And another thing, too, is the platform that they're on. You know, there's a lot of podcasters now that are on, they diverge their stuff. They do production on one side and they have their host on the other. And then, you know, so... someone finds you in Google, they click on it, and they take you over to your host versus taking you to your website. It's sheer insanity on my part. When I see that happen, I'm just like, they just do not realize what they are giving up. You know, I don't want to turn this into a, you know, a theological thing, but there are best practices, and so many podcasters just do not follow it because they've been brainwashed into thinking they have to do it one way or the other, or fed a line of bullshit.
It makes me think too, Todd, because look, we've been expanding on a line that we've been playing with in the last couple of months, and we're calling it blogcasting. And the idea basically is simple, that we have about 25 VOAs in our network that we work with that do our voice work and all that fun stuff. And they love reading blog posts for people. So we've got a couple clients that we're experimenting with now that instead of them doing a podcast, basically it's a blog read. And it's an audio version of the blog available there in podcast form. So when people hit that blog post, they can also just click play and they can listen to it. Or even if they like what they're hearing, they can say, I'm going to subscribe to this blog in an audio fashion and just listen to it every time there's a new post comes out of the RSS.
I don't know if they're still around. There was some services before that were automating that.
Horrible.
Yeah, it was horrible. And absolutely just, and of course, whatever voice they licensed, it was, monotone, no inflection. It's horrible.
But I think what Corey's talking about.
This is different.
Actually, having voice actors,
right? Voice actors,
voices stuff. Yeah,
yeah, that's
a and you can find a lot of folks who work in the audiobook space and are doing it part time. And for them, they'll go a penny a word and still give you some incredible content. I'm working with a guy right now at Las Vegas, and he's phenomenal. He does a ton of audiobooks. This is his favorite thing to do, is to sit in a booth and read, and his reads are incredible. So turning those blogs into podcasts is actually effective because it's not an automated process. And this is the thing, is that, we keep using the word boutique in our company because we want people to remember that we are people actually hand-rolling every aspect of our products. So as soon as you start automating aspects of art, you start generating crap. That's just all there is to it.
And that stuff that was being put out by that company was crap. And they automated
it. It's not art anymore, that's for sure.
Yeah, it was junk. It's horrible. Yeah. Very, very cool. I think what's interesting too, going back to the money aspect, is a lot of people are now willing to pay and they can focus on the content. I think it's a big shift. It really is, and good for you guys that you've come in at this time. If you'd have told me 5 years ago that you were going to do this business in podcasting, I would have been.
There were companies that have tried to do this.
The keyword was tried. Ago. Yeah.
10 years ago, and most of them went out of business.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's good to see people are spending money.
But it's a different time now, I think. Yeah. And it's only going to get better from here, I believe.
Well, I think it's largely because less and less people are taking podcasts as the amateur hobbyist. I'm sitting in my basement and I'm screaming into my laptop. More people are seeing that this is a legitimate vehicle to get your message across. And that added legitimacy to the medium means that there's now the timing is appropriate to hire a professional company to help you.
One thing I want to do before we run out of time here, show people your website and make sure people get over to podfly.net. And there's information on the website about who they are or who you guys are, what you do, talking about who uses your services and information on there. Anything specific they should look at on the website when they're on there?
No, it's really straightforward. If you guys are looking to have a podcast produced or currently have a podcast and you want to offload the production of it, just head on over and you can check out samples of our work, explanations of what we do, get a hold of us. We blog, we do newsletters, we keep in touch with everybody who even isn't working with us. So just hit podfly.net and you can find everything there.
Yeah, I also saw where you guys, you have an equipment list that you are recommend for people just starting out and advanced podcasters too, which I thought was really, really helpful as well.
Yeah. We want people to know just on the front facing end of things, what their potential capital investment might be into some equipment. Of course, it's an individualized call that we do with folks to make sure that we get what's right for their budget, what's right for their setup. But I think it's nice. We've had clients that come in and they send us the contact form and they say, okay, I bought the following equipment off your website. What's my next step? So, that's usually where we start. And we're big fans. We love the Focusrite stuff. We think the preamps sound really good. I'm a huge fan of the 7B. I know a lot of people like the Heil for the top end of it. But most people jump in and they say, yeah, I'm going to spend maybe anywhere from $50 to $100 to just get this thing off the ground. Mostly because we want people to feel like, Don't make a $700 investment in something you're going to pod fade on in 4 months. Make a $60 investment into something that you need to decide if you're going to get good at, and then upgrade your equipment if you feel the need.
Yeah, the Focusrite stuff I like if you're doing solo shows or maybe a single co-host, but if you're going to Skype someone in, that definitely is not the setup, at least I personally would go for if you're doing interview shows. trying to feed people in and get good balanced data. I don't know. Are you guys using the Focusrite at all for Skype in, folks?
No, we're only using the Focusrite for the front end on the microphone. Most people, just because of the convenience, are using Ecamm Recorder. And we're finding that's generating a good enough signal to work with in post. I'm the same as you, Todd. I mean, and probably you, Rob, as well. Like, I like my big fat mixer. I like multiple machines. I like having independent channels that I can work with at the end of the day. But you have to consider, as I'm sure you know, with most clients, that's just super daunting. That's too much. Yep. As soon as that mixer shows up with all those knobs and faders, they go into panic mode. So once they see, okay, here's my Focusrite. I install Ecamm Recorder and I'm good to go. You know, that's a barrier to entry that's low enough that doesn't scare them off. When they get down the road and they feel like I'm ready to really step up my game because this is something I'm going to do full time. Now it's like, yeah, let's talk soundproofing. Let's talk mixer. Let's talk about a second machine. That now we're having some real fun.
The Ecamm stuff, the thing I worry about Skype is they keep changing the rules and they keep breaking stuff. So I'd hate to be reliant upon a software solution to record stuff on Skype. So again, if I guess it's one of those risk versus cost type situations that you have to consider. If it's working great now, great. But, you know, Skype has continued to break stuff over the years. And I'm even afraid to update what's on here. Sometimes I'm forced to just because sometimes they just, you know, they don't care about us. They care about
push an update to you and you don't have a choice.
Yeah.
I mean, it just does it. You know, that's what I've noticed too.
But, yeah, I mean, hardware is always the best way to go. My ideal podcast setup had been, I had a Roland 2480, you know, which is a 24-track multi-track recorder that could do 16 simultaneous with a built-in hard disk. This thing doesn't get my email. You know, this thing only does one thing very, very well, and that's record audio. So I think that's a big thing as well, is that, you know, we have to consider portability too for a lot of folks. It's, they don't have the space to set up to do something big like we would like to.
Hey, just we're almost here out of time. Let everybody know, potentially, I'm supposed to be getting on an airplane this evening. I don't know if that's actually happening or not right now. I just got an email. But I think I may not be available next Saturday. And if that's the case, Rob, we'll probably want to push, if we can, to Sunday. I know it's hard to get guests on Sunday. But if we can push to Sunday next week, maybe you and I have to go solo. And I know the following week you have a conflict, right?
Yeah. I'm going to be gone. Yes.
Okay. So if we do have a show next week, we'll just keep you advised. We'll let you know, watch on Twitter and stuff, NMS podcast. And then you can of course follow Rob and I or at Rob Greenlee or myself at Geek News. And we'll have the information there on the show. But yeah, it's a kind of a weird trip, but I'm headed to New Mexico for a week for a consulting gig. So but maybe not, I don't know, we'll see. It's it came on at the last minute and things are up in the air at this moment. Maybe I'm shifting right, I don't know. So I don't like travel plans coming out of Hawaii that flex. It's their money and their airline tickets that are gonna get jacked if that's the case, but it's okay. Otherwise, I think, did you have anybody already scheduled for next week?
No, I did not.
Okay.
So, yeah, so I think we're clear. If we just want to do an episode, I think that there's some stuff brewing in the space that we could probably spend an hour talking about.
Yeah, some stuff that I don't know if we can dare. I know so there's some things going that we probably, we'll see if any announcements come out. We have to be careful with some news we're sitting on right now. But there's definitely some stuff happening in the space for sure, positive and negative. So we'll keep you advised. Anything that you want to allude to that you can or can't at this point, Rob?
Well, I did put out on my Twitter post that it's looking like that the New Media Expo may be having some problems right now. You know, nothing, like you said, Todd, nothing is confirmed on that, but it appears that, you know, there's not a lot of stuff going on with their website. Their social media channels have ceased, and some other things that we can't talk about yet that are going on too. But I think that's the big news. I don't know if you wanted to mention that on the show this week, but I wanted to kind of put it out there because I kind of put it out there. Because, I mean, there's other people in the space right now that are speculating on that as well. And based on what some former employees are saying publicly now, that things are not looking good for the expo is out there. So
I will withhold at this point until we get some more information on that particular topic. But
you're in a different situation. So,
I'm hoping whatever's going on that it gets resolved, and that, we need great events for podcasters to go to, events where they can go and rub elbows and meet vendors and learn from one another. It's highly critical. We definitely have, a shift with the podcast movement going to Chicago, the week after the 4th of July. That event's happening then. So, I'm hoping that we'll still have a spring event with NMX. That is yet to be seen. But anyway, it's time of flux right now. But lots of, there's lots of stuff going on, too, in the space. It's maybe time. And they got the streaming media conferences, lots of different events that content creators can go to.
I'm going to be back in Atlanta at the end of the month at the RAIN Summit. There's a whole big panel session and event going on back there that involves a lot of podcast topics that are going on back there. Yeah, there's other events that are coming into, on the broadcast radio side, on the online radio side, there's a lot of new people coming into the space this past week. The IAB upfronts.
I haven't heard too much on that. Did you hear how it went?
I heard it went very, very well. I mean, the event was very, very well attended by all the agencies and the brands, all the big networks, and more on the public radio side. The Midroll was there, WNYC was there.
They were presenting.
Correct.
Yeah. So the question is, I don't think there was a video of it. I didn't see, there was no live.
I didn't see any video yet. No, that's right. I mean, it was just, it was an event that was just held back in New York.
Yeah.
They had a similar event in Dallas right after the podcast movement. That was a little smaller scale.
Right.
But the IEB is trying to do this around the country. The whole concept of an upfront, right, is to pre-book advertising. Mm-hmm. That's the idea behind it. And to get all those people together to commit to a long-term relationship around sponsorship. It typically focuses on big shows right now.
Yeah. And we decided not to participate in that event this go-around. We may, the next one, we may have a different thought process on it. I think what we're, from our perspective, it was a big bill. It was a big amount of money to participate. Oh, yeah. So we, trying to look at, okay, what is the most bang for our buck for our content creators, and what can we deliver to them? It's a trade-off. It definitely is.
Well, it was a little bit surprising, all of the podcasts and networks that weren't there.
Well, most of them are not IEB members.
Yeah, exactly. So we're still not 100% pulled together in this industry yet.
Yeah.
So,
And it's not inexpensive. It's not an expensive line. It's not a inexpensive line item per year to be an IAB member.
No. And to participate in all these events too.
No.
Yeah.
No, not at all. It's you're looking at, I think the cheapest entry level membership at IAB is $7,000 a year based upon your revenue. Mm-hmm. It's all revenue based, and then to participate in a variety of different events is different costs as well. They are a nonprofit organization, so the members have to support the events, and so it's not like they're out making money. That's not the purpose at all. But I think what they're doing with the podcast measurement community, with both the working groups, two working groups, one that's working on the stats side and one that's working on the message side. I think we should start seeing some paperwork coming out of there, I hope soon. The stats side may be a little bit longer, but I think they're making good progress as well.
Plus, I wanted to mention really quick coming up here September 18th through the 20th in Beverly Hills is the Los Angeles Pod Festival, Podfest at lapodfest.com. So that's, it looks like they pulled together a really great event down there.
Should be fun, if nothing else. At least you'll be laughing the whole weekend because it's primarily comedy shows.
Yeah, and I'll try and get a guest on from that show. I don't know. What's the... So if we do a show next...
Sunday would be the...
Next Sunday would be...
Right during
the 20th. That would be the last day of the event. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's probably a little too late unless we want to do a post-mortem on the show.
Well, I'm not going to be there. You're not going to be there. So we'll have to get someone that did go there to give us the post-mortem.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I'll see if I can do that. I can probably reach out to Chris Mancini or somebody and try and pull him on.
Corey, is there anything else you wanted to add here before we bust out of here?
No, I feel good. I'm staying radio silent on NMX as well because I've heard my share of rumblings. And let's just say that my company is currently deferring on decisions. So, but LA Podfest sounds, it's more like a fan fest. I've never been.
It
I'm
is.
Thinking of going. But yeah, I understand it's more just podcast fans and podcasters, less practical.
Well, they do have a track in there of panels. So it... Not too many people know about that, but those panels are, I was on one of them last year, and they're usually pretty packed with people going in and attending the sessions talking about podcasting, kind of like what happens at these other events. But
as long as there's not too many marketers and life coaches, I'm interested.
Yeah. I mean, it's all comedians mainly. I mean, that's who basically comes out for this thing, is all the LA comedians all go and hobnob and all connect. It's very much a comedian focused event. Even though the organizers would love to have it expand way beyond that, it's going to be tough to expand beyond that because it's just so dominant down there.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, I'm going to do here is wrap this up. Corey, if you want to hang out for a few minutes after the show, that's great. Otherwise, everyone, thanks for being here. If you have comments on today's show, you can email Rob or I. It's rob@newmediashow.com or todd@newmediashow.com. You can reach me at Geek News. Rob, where can they reach you besides?
Probably the best place is Twitter at Rob Greenlee. And I do have a website, robgreenlee.com. And I'm also at Spreaker, and I do a live show called the Spreaker Live Show every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific. Just go to SpreakerLiveShow.com and you can check out that show. It's just another show about podcasting.
And Corey, if they want to reach you, what's the best way?
Corey@podfly.net, Corey.
All right. So give Corey's company a try, give him a reach out, and keep him employed in building the company. We need great companies like Corey's in the space. And definitely, you've heard everything that they do. And if that doesn't get you excited, I don't know what will. But everyone, thanks for being here. Again, we'll see you next week, either on Saturday or Sunday. But until next time, everyone, take care. We'll see you. Aloha.